Well, how does one begin? You know, Andrew and I were actually just having a wonderful time recording Lot Awful Movies, literally in the middle of it. We got the news, and neither of us had the slightest chance of continuing that recording.
Yeah.
So, Andrew, I'm going to go ahead and guess you're not fantastic right now.
No. Do you do this, right? Like, so what happened was we were yucking it up, recording Lot Awful Movies on this thoroughly mediocre Keanu Reeves film. And you said, I don't think I can go on because Ruth Bader Ginsburg just died. And I immediately went to the bargaining stage, right? I said, yeah. I went and I Googled and I had to click on two separate links, right?
Yeah.
Before, because I just wanted not to believe that was the case. I don't know if you went through that.
But, yeah, I hear you, because that's definitely happened with people where there's been some hoax or some whatever. But
yeah,
I just happened to, you know, I had my phone visible. Maybe I shouldn't have. We could have finished the recording. I had my phone in visible range, and a text popped up. You know, like just end of the world type text, and I couldn't. I wasn't going to be like, oh, I'll check if that's true later. You know, it's like,
yeah,
need to know this now. And once I saw that NPR had reported it, I didn't really question it, because why wouldn't this year be the worst fucking year in the history of time? Why not? We're so close, Andrew. We got so goddamn close. You know, to maybe. Maybe being able to just patch things out, just get duct tape this fucking country and get through this election and maybe start to fix things. And I don't know if you're going to be able to talk any of us off the ledge, but this feels like the greatest of plans. We had this, you know, this tiny window of being able to, yeah, I know it's Joe Biden who I'm not in love with, but at least we could have started fixing things. Things could have gotten better. What does this mean now? I mean, what are your initial thoughts?
I will not be able to talk you off the ledge. My initial thoughts are this. It is considerably easier to schedule and ram through a judicial appointment than it is to steal a Supreme Court seat. And I know this really well. Puppy barking.
That's
in the
fine.
Background, but
yeah.
It's going to happen. Yeah.
Yeah. You're going to, everybody can learn that when we do a live reaction edit, how much your dog barks, but you know, it's comfort. It's comforting in a way right now. I'll take it.
I love my puppy.
That sweet doggy, Andrew, doesn't know what's going on right now.
So I happen to know that Antonin Scalia died in either February or March of 2016, because as I often tell the story at live shows and get-togethers, which we can't have those either. It's fantastic. Right. That's what brought you and I together. I talk about the fact that, I think Scalia died in March, because the way I remember it, and human memory sucks. And I promise this will connect up to RBG in a minute. But
yeah. Well, I mean, it's the most recent precedent.
I reached out to you in February of 2016. You had a guest on who you were doing your usual excellent interview, and it was great. And then the guest said, you know, opined something on legal matters, and I was like, well, you know, this sort of went off the rails at that point. And if you ever need a law guy, feel free to give me a call. And to your infinite credit, instead of just filing me with your crank emails, you held on to that. And a couple of weeks later, you wrote back when Scalia died and said, well, let's talk about that. And that was the first time I ever went on what was then Atheistically Speaking, what is now Serious Inquiries Only, and what what birthed the show. So in other words, Republicans had to stonewall for an additional 6 months in 2016.
With control of the Senate. So.
With just control of the Senate, right? Yeah. I pulled up the Senate calendar. The Senate is, they have gone home for the weekend, but they reconvene Monday the 21st. And if you don't think Mitch McConnell is going to table absolutely everything in order to hold Senate judiciary confirmation hearings for whatever lunatic Donald Trump puts up, then you're way more optimistic than I am.
I'm not even going to waste a second of my energy with well, didn't they say in an election? Fuck off. We know it's bullshit. We've always known it's bullshit. It's not.
McConnell has openly admitted. He was asked the question.
Long since has pointing out Republican hypocrisy lost all meaning to me. You know, I guess it's still from time to time, you can't help it. You can't help but be like, well, isn't it weird that, you know, Lindsey Graham the other day tweeted about how his opponent hadn't released his tax returns. And you're like, oh, well, oh, we got it. And it's, I don't blame people, but it's just, it doesn't matter anymore. They don't care. They do not care bit about consistency. So if any of you are sitting there thinking that's going to have some impact on Mitch McConnell, it's not. Sorry.
So there are 6 full weeks plus 3 partial weeks left in the Senate schedule for 2020. And that means that Mitch McConnell is coordinating with the White House right now about who their candidate is and how to cram him through. They could be exceptionally evil about this, right? Like and let me give you what I just thought of, right? As kind of the ultimate twist of the knife, Trump could decline to name a nominee until after the election, right? Which is November 3rd. And the Senate still meets the weeks of the 9th, the 16th, the 30th, December 7th and December 14th. So in other words, Trump could say, oh no, I'm definitely not going to do any of this.
I don't think he would do that, but I guess I'll pose it in the form of the question that I'm sure we're asking. Basics wise, what is the minimum time that they can legally get a nominee through? I mean, how much time do they have to take?
So what they have,
because I mean, traditionally, there's the, you know, you got the subcommittee. They get you do a nomination. They kind of do some stuff where they interview the, you know, there's a process. And but is all that kind of, you know, it's not like there's a rule per se about that. Can they just do it incredibly quickly and bypass all of that, or what can they do?
So there are a couple of answers to that, right? The first is, let's talk about all of this in some order, right? So, we talked about the process of confirming Neil Gorsuch in 2017, that the Republican Senate invoked the so-called nuclear option. Reducing, basically saying that in terms of confirming Supreme Court justices, that would not be subject to the filibuster and would therefore, by a clarification of the rules, be subject to a straight up or down vote. That was a radical departure, and again, no one cares.
Doesn't matter. Huh?
It doesn't remotely matter.
And, I'll say this. is there anything that could matter enough to, we've looked at the numbers and unfortunately we need 4 Republican senators. Is there anything that could matter enough to 4 Republican senators?
I can't yet. We talked about that. Okay. So in terms of, the cloture is not required, which requires 60 votes, which yeah, you definitely wouldn't get. We then, took a look at, who could potentially defect, right? The Senate is currently split 53-47. Because Republicans control the White House, that means Mike Pence gets to break any ties. So it means that you need 3 defectors and for 1 Republican not to be present, right? Yeah. And really what that means is you need 4 defectors, right? You need for it either.
Even
to be
Marco
50.
Rubio might clock in for this vote, huh?
Yeah. So you start thinking and you're like, okay, who has a reputation for standing up to the president? All right, give us Mitt Romney. Never minding the fact that Mitt Romney almost certainly will be a supporter of whoever Trump nominates to fill Ginsburg's seat. But give us Mitt Romney. Give us Lisa Murkowski in Alaska. And then, from the political standpoint, Susan Collins is getting hammered. But the polls are still close, right? Like, she still certainly believes that she can be reelected.
I've gone through that exact thought process. And then I think, well, which is the thing she'll think she needs to do if she's losing? Senators, it might be all the more reason to jump behind the Amy Coney Barrett nomination or whatever.
We're about to be there when you get, but assume, right? Again, best case scenario.
Best case scenario.
Right?
Sure.
We get Susan Collins on board. She says, "Yeah, I'm very sorry, and I definitely learned my lesson the last time. And you know, this is totally not an opportunistic move to try and keep my Senate seat." That 3 isn't enough. You need 4. And as I go looking for a 4th vote, I cannot find it. Right. So the when you look to vulnerable incumbents, for example, Cory Gardner in Colorado. Cory Gardner is going to lose. And so he has just hardcore doubled down in his campaign of being pro-Trump, of being extreme right, because that's going to be his constituency. That's how he's going to cash in when he loses. It would do him no good to try and move back towards the center. I mean, we could do this alphabetically if you wanted, but I can't come up. The same thing is true of Martha McSally in Arizona. I mean, she's getting destroyed, and she has been a hardcore pro-Trump. But she's not going to change. Lindsey Graham is potentially losing to Jamie Harrison. But, like, you know, the shame Lindsey Graham train got derailed, 4 years ago. I can't come up with anybody.
I think it's hard because if somehow this were a thing that Trump was getting to do that a regular Republican wouldn't, then maybe you could say, like, well, they see that he's probably going to lose. Like, they don't have much incentive to back. The problem is he knows, and everybody knows, he's going to nominate a horrible 27-year-old right winger who Republicans would like. That's what they would do anyway. And so even the Republican senators who maybe could in a fit of optimism, maybe you could think like, oh, maybe this person will do something about it. They wouldn't be incentivized to do it because that's what they want too. You know, it'd be one thing if it was a battle between Trump and a Republican on something that traditionally Republicans haven't agreed with, you know, and even those battles, Trump wins almost always, but like, even that's not going to happen.
Look, the one thing that I will predict should not be comforting, I don't think it'll be Amy Coney Barrett.
Really?
I said I thought that would be the next one in a real time. Like, all you have to do, and I've pulled up Trump's Supreme Court list, right? All you have to do is find somebody who is going to give you all the terrible things that you want, but isn't the very worst lightning rod, right? And that's what kind of, and that's what you need to, like, you know, shore up any like Marco Rubio wavering, right?
Well, you're let me, like, ask you, okay, what fine. Might be, I don't know if this is a counterpoint or a point in your favor. If they have time to do one, do they have time to do several? I mean, can Trump just offer up the worst version of whatever? And if, oh, whoops, we lost one Republican senator. Okay, well, go to the next one, go to the next nominee, and then still have time to do that.
So the answer to that is a little bit more complicated, right? Because Mitch McConnell has changed the rules. And again, when I say change the rules, what I mean is to actually amend the Senate rules requires a 2/3 vote. So that's never going to happen, right? But what you can do is you can appeal to the decision of the chair to, quote, clarify the operation of certain rules, right? And again, since you're just appealing to your own body, right, the Senate, you know, there's nothing to stop you from saying, I want to clarify that this rule also means, like, you know, we get tacos on the floor of the Senate, right? And you could do that, right? There's nothing to stop. You can't go to court. You can't get an injunction. These are the internal rules of the Senate. So, you know, there's no external recourse. Mitch McConnell changed the rules to radically shorten the amount of time that judicial nominees are before the Senate Judiciary Committee, right? Down to 3 hours from 30. That has not yet been put into place for Supreme Court nominees, but you could. There's nothing that we could do to stop Mitch McConnell from doing that. Again, that doesn't require the same, for Republicans to defect. The way I look at it, and again, I'm not a great person to role play a Trump political strategist, not only because I'm not evil, but because I tend to, like, my approach to political advice and decision making is the sort of, like, oh, well, if we've got to get something done, like, let's block out the worst possible outcomes, right? And we know that Trump doesn't think that way, yeah, right? So if it were not Trump, so look. I said it's not going to be Amy Coney Barrett because that's the Andrew Breen applying.
Yeah, I don't really agree with that argument.
You might be right. I want to walk that back. If it were me, if I were advising Trump, I would be like, yeah, let's take – and look, I haven't researched
any of these.
It's
almost like
you'd
be like an Obama who nominated Merrick Garland.
No, because I'm putting myself in the sort of evil mindset, but, you know, it's hard for me to get all
Obama.
The way in.
Like an evil, like the Obama with a mustache or something that came from the other dimension.
from the Star Trek
evil
dimension.
Evil mustache Obama from another dimension would do that. But I think Trump would just nominate the worst piece of shit conservative
possible.
He
might, but so look, that Supreme Court list, right, that had Ted Cruz on it. I'm just scrolling through right here. Again, I want to be clear. I haven't researched any of these judges, right? But as I look through, right, former Solicitor General Paul Clement, for example, right, that would lose zero Republican votes, mm-hmm, right? Arch conservative, ran out, former Scalia clerk, but, you know, ex Solicitor General of the, it fits the mold of Trump's two prior Supreme Court.
Well, not only that, I think I could be wrong, and maybe this will agree with your point. Like, I think Trump, you know, he's obviously just outsourcing this, right? So whoever Trump has decided is in charge of this, you know, I guess we need to get in their head, right?
Yeah,
it's Federalist Society.
It's Leonard Leo of the Federalist Society is who he's outsourced.
Also, wasn't McGahn heavily involved?
McGahn was heavily involved.
What the hell is he doing these days? Is he still involved? I don't know.
Yeah, he's still just evading subpoenas.
But, yeah.
So
I want to take a second
Clement is 54, right? So, okay, you know, you don't get the fact that, like, you don't get a Corey on the court. But, you'd have to be very, very happy if you are the Republicans right now with replacing Ginsburg with a Clement, right? Go ahead. Yeah. I'm sorry.
You know, in a weird way, I almost wonder if, you know, Trump would have rather this not happen, because now it's like having the judge appointees was, you know, his biggest thing to win over Republicans who may not necessarily like him. And like, this is, you know, now if he replaces Ginsburg, which he's going to right now, it's almost like that's another thing he can't be running on. Like, he's already doing it. So, but anyway, I just wanted to say,
I want to sure. Amplify that a tiny bit, because I think this will also empower the defeatist wing of the Democratic Party, right? Yeah. It doesn't, right? He's gonna, right? It doesn't fucking matter, right? Like we've had the very easy thing to say to those on the far left is, you really want to hand Donald Trump, you know, Ruth Bader Ginsburg's replacement. And that, with that weapon gone, I promise you, given our listenership, that we will see that. By the way, if you want me to defriend you on Facebook, post that. Say, oh, well, doesn't matter. Don't have to support Joe Biden anymore. Yeah, go ahead, post that, and I'm happy to defriend you.
I hear you. I think the
and block you on Twitter.
I think that the simple truth is those aren't the people deciding the election, honestly.
I agree.
And that's not to say it's any better that it's a bunch of centrists who are deciding between not voting or voting for Joe Biden. That's honestly who it is. There aren't that many people who are like honestly deciding between Trump and Biden. It's that we need – the numbers game is that we need to activate voters who might have sat out or whatever. And I just listened to a really good episode on – I think it was Ezra Klein that had somebody talking about, like, okay, who are the voters that we actually can and hopefully will get to swing this election? They're just not. If you're listening to the show, if you're an avid listener of the show, or you're any sort of politics junkie, you know nothing about those people. Like, you're not. And by that, I mean, and I absolutely include myself. I don't know how to relate to the people who are like, don't know enough about Joe Biden yet to have decided on, you know, like it's weird. The polling that they did, it was like, they don't know enough about Joe Biden. Everybody already knows that Trump is the worst. And so it's a question of like the people who are going to decide that they want to actually do the work to go vote Joe Biden, and knowing what's going to appeal to those people is very counterintuitive to people like you and I, who are like just way into this all the time. So, but, yeah. But anyway, I did want to say, I just want to take a second, you know, I mean, yes, we've gone 24 minutes or whatever here on my account, and you know, there's going to be plenty of time to do better tributes to the life of RBG.
God. Yeah.
This is just, we instantly are afraid and feel horrible and scared and everything. And it's, you know, I don't mean this to, you know, not address the fact that RBG was an amazing person and that part, capturing that part of it. But I just don't think we're ready to do that yet. At least I'm not.
I'm really glad that you said that, because, Ruth Bader Ginsburg was, an amazing person, an amazing legal mind, and we 100% will
we'll fitting tribute. Put an OA style pin in that topic for later.
And look, I want, and you know, and you and I went back and forth on this before we started the record. It is important to remember, right? We think of these Supreme Court justices as pieces on the chessboard, right? And in some sense sense they are, right? Like that they decide the longitudinal future of civil rights in this country. I mean, we just I don't know if it was on Friday's show or if it was part of the record for Tuesday's show, but you know, the number of things that we think of as being firmly entrenched rights that are, you know, 50 years old or younger from and we owe to the Supreme Court are it's a staggering 50 to 60 years old. It's a staggering number. But yeah, like that this was also a real person
Yeah, an amazing person. And I think we'll likely, you know, we can do a nice OA deep dive on some great RBG decisions and all that. That's not where we are right now. I just wanted to mention that.
I'm really glad you did. We're hurting right here.
Yeah.
I'm
just terrified. Let me pose a question. I don't know if this is optimistic or what, but like, what if somebody, were to ask, look, we already essentially had 5 conservative justice majority. So could somebody, you know, if somebody asked you the question, Andrew, of why are you guys so terrified? Why are you so worried? It's like they already controlled the court anyway. It doesn't really do any good to win 6-3 rather than 5-4. That doesn't matter, right? I mean, so what would you say to, I guess, some optimist out there or somebody who was, who's not with us on how just absolutely catastrophic this is?
Yeah, I would say a couple of things. Number one, I would point you to just the sheer number. Right, I would point you to the Sheldon Whitehouse brief, right, that we've talked about on the show. We have link. If you go and type in White House as all one word on openargs.com, or if you go to the OA wiki, you can pull that up. And he documents mathematically the enormous number of 5-4 politically divided decisions that we have had. So I want to say, I guess, a couple of things under that, right? So I mean, that is just a fact, right? And so then the question is, those become 6-3. Why is that a big deal? Here's why that's a big deal, right? Because eventually, right, you have, I mean, you know, Clarence Thomas is not young. I would have to, you know, Google his
he's pretty old,
his age, right? Let's pull that up right now, right? Clarence Thomas was born in 1948, so he is 72.
Oh, he's younger than my dad, so
it is, you know, is it implausible that, you know, what you do, again, you fight the holding actions first, right? So what you absolutely have to do is, right, you have to replace, again, prior to an hour ago, the thought was Joe Biden will almost certainly replace Ruth Bader Ginsburg, and that probably Stephen Breyer, born 1938.
Yeah, he's quite old. I remember looking that one up.
Yeah. So he is 82 years old. That he would probably retire under a Biden presidency. So you would get two holding actions. You would get you'd be replacing two liberal justices, presumably with two additional liberal justices. And, you know, and then you would just be looking and you would say, all right, I want to be macabre, but, you know, playing in a, you know, Deadpool here or whatever. But like this now makes that, right, a swing makes that almost impossible, right? Like, because now, right, even if Biden wins and Breyer retires and, you know, something happens to Clarence Thomas, you're now right back where we started from, right?
So I want to also answer, I don't know why I posed as the optimist, but I'll answer my own question, which is, it's not just a matter of, you know, losing 5-4 rather than now losing 6-3 instead of 5-4. Imagine fucking, you know, just sorry, my brain is so scrambled. I better pull it, you know, the Chief Justice Roberts being a part of the liberal dissent, you know, like, I mean, the idea that, so who is the center of the court now?
This, if, if we get so suppose that happens, right?
It'll be Gorsuch probably, right? He'll be the center of the court.
The swing vote, right? Yeah. I mean,
I'm not saying the swing. Well, no, I guess yeah, I am saying right, the swing. Yeah. That's the fulcrum, same thing.
Right? The center, the swing vote goes from shame John Roberts, which, and this is, I was getting to that point, but I'm mm-hmm. glad that you sort of steered it quickly, right? So the 5-4, look, we had cases in which we successfully shamed John Roberts, right? Without a doubt, right? The citizenship question on the census would have been on the census if not for successful shaming of John Roberts with the discovery of the Hofeller tapes. We've talked about that on opening arguments a lot. In a 6-3 Supreme Court, that now becomes right. Yeah, I mean, in an RBG-less court, as you point out, that decision goes the other way. And the strategy shifts from shame John Roberts, a doctrinaire conservative who cares about his institutional legacy, to appeal to the vanity of a Neil Gorsuch on a case like and there are only two of these, right, that are 6-3 with that alignment, on a case like the Zarda versus Altitude Express, right, in which as it turns out that Gorsuch's view of textualism enabled him to be picked off. But I want to be clear, right? Under an Anthony Kennedy, right? Somebody who might be a plausibly a 75 on a scale of 0 to 100, right? 0 most liberal, 100 most conservative. It was find good arguments that appealed to a right of center. Mm-hmm. Justice.
Boy, those were the days, weren't they?
Yeah. And again, you're starting on a 2-1 disadvantage, 3-1 disadvantage. He was a conservative guy, but he could be persuaded. He had an open mind, particularly on LGBTQ issues. Yeah. With John Roberts, 92, 93, right?
Yeah. We always bring it up. He wrote a horrible dissent.
In Obergefell. Yeah. And that shifted from make very, very good arguments to shame John Roberts. But, and so that constricted the realm of cases in which you thought you had a plausible chance of winning, right? Like when you look at it, you know, there are cases that you just write off now going before the Supreme Court. You're like, oh, well, this is not going to embarrass John Roberts to vote with the conservatives, so he will. Moving that center to Gorsuch means that the game plan is you have to do both. You have to shame John Roberts, and you have to appeal to the hairline distinction between textualism and originalism. The idea that this decision is hanging on something, right? It's hanging on the plain words of the statute as opposed to what Clarence Thomas would like the plain words of the statutes to mean, and so imagines that the founding fathers thought that they meant. It is, and if you don't see, let me not phrase it that way, that constrains it greatly shrinks the range of cases, and the default rule is just going to be on cases that have a conservative political outcome. Those are going to be 6-3 rubber stamped from here to eternity. And again, we've talked about that. We've spent the 35 minutes we've been on the air, the 15 minutes we spent, as a support group for each other before hitting record. I can't come up with a strategy to stop this. Let me
try something on you. But before that though, I think I still want to talk about, you know, just the depth of the fucked that we are. What are the decisions you're most worried about? What about election crap? You know, what about the, you know, Bush v. Gore style stuff? Where does that go now? I mean, what are you most worried about in terms of, say, we get an immediate right-wing ghoul, you know, the worst case, which I think will likely be the real case. We no longer really have to say worst case scenario. We're living the fucking worst case scenario all the time. But anyway, what are you most worried about with that?
What I did for that while you asked that question is I just pulled up the cases in which the Supreme Court has already – No, that have that they've already granted cert.
Oh, gotcha.
And are, you know, pending to be briefed and to be decided. And just scrolling through, let me give you a couple of examples that pop up right here, right? California versus Texas, which is a challenge to the entirety of the Affordable Care Act and an invitation to a right-wing court to revisit the narrow Roberts compromise in the Sebelius decision from 2014. The Supreme Court has absolutely zero compunctions about overturning precedent, particularly precedent from 6 years ago.
There's no chance of that mattering whatsoever.
That case is pending. So
can I take a second to say we just had a Donald Trump town hall in which he campaigned. This is the upside down world we're living in. He campaigns on protecting pre-existing conditions over his opponent, who's going to get rid of pre-existing conditions while doing the exact opposite of that. Like, isn't that incredible? I can't think of when has that ever happened? It's unbelievable. He's gutting pre-existing conditions, and this court, as you say, in this decision here, could just strike down the whole damn thing while campaigning that he's the one who's going to save it. It's a nightmare.
Yeah. How about cert granted July 2nd? We talked about on the show in the DOJ versus House Committee on the Judiciary as to whether the House Committee gets an unredacted copy of the full Mueller report.
Oh, yeah.
would love to see that happen. That's probably not going to happen. How about Fulton versus City of Philadelphia, in which the court will decide a bunch of different free exercise questions and raised in the cert petition. Now, this cert was granted earlier in February, right? Raised in the cert petition is that the court should overturn Employment Division versus Smith, right? That, liberal decision authored by Antonin Scalia, and essentially read into the First Amendment RFRA. And this court is, you know, already terrible on religious issues. How about Jones versus Mississippi? This is an Eighth Amendment case, and this is a question of whether Mississippi must find that a juvenile is, quote, permanently incorrigible before it may impose a sentence of life without parole. So, you know, if you
How
like
do you
the idea.
Find that a kid is permanently anything.
How yeah, well, mean? And that is think of how thin that protection is, right? That it doesn't say you can't impose the most severe penalty in the state on a juvenile. It just says you have to make a separate finding. And Mississippi has asked this Supreme Court
to not even require that,
to not require that level of protection.
What do you think is the status of, you know, abortion rights, gay rights? I mean, what do you see happening there?
I told you what I thought a Roberts-led court would do. I thought a Roberts-led court.
Yeah, and do you think you were wrong there? I mean, you predicted the downfall of Obergefell, and it hasn't happened yet.
They haven't had a case to challenge it. Those cases, and I can't find it on the pending list. But. There are cases coming out of the Fifth Circuit involving differential treatment in Texas of same-sex marriages versus opposite-sex marriages. You've got to tee that up before the court. They have not had the opportunity to revisit. Nobody has said, because I think there was some sense of, like, you know, toe in the water. Is that a bridge too far to ask John Roberts? But you put somebody else who doesn't care, right? And just like they've now said, right? Like I read you the case in which the cert petition says, as one of the questions presented, the court should overrule Employment Division versus Smith. There will be cert petitions filed within the next 6 months that say the court should overrule Obergefell versus Hodges, right? hasn't been yet, but that question will come before the Supreme Court. The ADF will tee it up that way. Let's go back to abortion rights. I told you that what I thought a Roberts-led court would do is and I think there's every reason to believe this is preserve the at the margins, but essentially gut real protections by defining narrowly what counts as an undue burden, and we saw that even in the decisions that were sort of hailed as a victory for abortion rights, the whole women's health really. Versus Hellerstedt, we broke that down on the show it sort of paved the way for the analysis just to be, oh, you don't have to show that the benefits of the law outweigh the burden. You just have to show that the burden is not undue. And what counts as undue? You know, what Clarence Thomas thinks is an undue burden. Clarence Thomas, who, by the way, in his also something we've talked about on the show, repeats provably falsehoods about Margaret Sanger and the David Barton level of rewriting of American history in his concurrences and dissents on abortion issues, right? You have a lunatic zealot who rewrites history on the court, who will now be in an unambiguous majority of justices who said, well, obviously Roe v. Wade is
you're probably right, but I will say, Margaret Sanger wasn't great, but like, who the fuck cares? It has nothing to do with anything.
But repeating to go through, I mean, the importance is reiterating David Barton authored talking points, right? Like it's not litigating the question of like, right? Nobody in the first half of the 20th century is really great on a lot of things, right? And as you point out,
the people who won, a lot of the suffragettes were like horribly racist. Yeah. Honestly, it doesn't mean that they were wrong to win women the right to vote. It has nothing to do with the underlying rights there.
So this is bad, and that's a ridiculous understatement. If you want,
Do you think they go even further? So we've kind of gone through a phase here the last 4 years, 2 years, whatever the hell it is, of as you said, decisions that seem like they're not rejecting Roe per se, but are actually making things a lot worse and making it even harder for women in red states to get abortions. So do you think they take it to the next level and just say, fuck it, just reverse Roe?
I think that is plausible. And I would add, if you want to be truly terrified, a position that is 100% nonsense, that I would have said up until an hour ago has zero chance of ever being argued before the Supreme Court, let alone becoming the law of the land, all of a sudden becomes terrifyingly plausible, and that is the ADF bringing a case before the Supreme Court to argue that fetuses are persons under the 14th Amendment. Right. In other words, let's explain the implications of that. If Roe v. Wade is overturned, then states may ban abortion entirely. Right. If fetuses are persons under the 14th Amendment, then no state may permit abortion.
I was just going to. Oh, my God.
That is the implication of that position.
That
is what that means. That is the fevered wet dream of the crazy Christian conservative, right?
I mean, that's Gilead shit. Like,
yes. And you might say, like, oh, well, that's nonsense. You would be right, but it is no more nonsense than the position that ultimately won the day in DC versus Heller. It is absolutely preposterous. It is without legal support. It is insane. It's something John Roberts wouldn't sign on to. I'm not confident that, Josh Hawley, Chief Justice Josh Hawley, would.
Well, I mean, the key question is
Kavanaugh. Chief Justice, but
Kavanaugh and Gorsuch, right? That's the key question. We know that Alito and Thomas are just fucking out of this world. Like, they're just, there's no hope there, right? I mean, so is it just Kavanaugh seems to often be that way? Maybe not 100% of the time with them. Gorsuch, you know, do you think you...
Gorsuch wrote a surprisingly... I mean, we've talked about this. It is worth revisiting, right? The... Gorsuch's decision was surprisingly well-informed and humane in the Zarda and Altitude Express, right, in those consolidated cases, right? We talked about how it did not use, you know, problematic concepts like born biologically female or whatever, right? Like it that even sort of well-meaning liberal judges have used, right? Like it was 100%, you know, a woke decision.
It wasn't woke so much as based on a textualist.
Yeah, the rhetoric was woke, right? You could write a textualist decision and say, and I'm not going to manufacture trans slurs here because
so God let me help, ask you this. Know,
they're suffering way more than we are. I will say this, having prepped for the show when we did both Kavanaugh and Gorsuch, there's absolutely nothing in their judicial history that would lead me to believe that they're anything other than a vote to repeal Roe v. Wade. I'd love to be pleasantly surprised, but, you know, that's just hope. That's not there is nothing you can find in their opinions that would lead me to believe that. Sorry.
Let's talk about we'll see. Maybe, again, we're reacting right after the fact. Yep. Maybe things could change. Maybe plans could unfold. But the only thing I can think of off the top of my head in terms of resistance, in terms of what to do, besides, you know, just a crowd of like 5 million people outside of the Supreme Court or whatever, you know, the White House, whatever it would be, threaten that we will pack the court immediately if Trump replaces.
Joe Biden should explicitly campaign on packing the court.
Okay.
I wonder if
that's the kind of thing that maybe could work on for Republican senators. If you had an explicit promise that if you replace RBG and violate, you know, we can pretend that they set the rule of not, you know, whatever. If you replace RBG, we will pack the court. And look at our fucking poll numbers right now. Odds are, I mean, I know a lot of people are wary of polls, but like odds are, you know, Biden is going to win. Do you think that kind of promise could maybe, that threat of action could maybe sway for Republican senators to say, you know, we don't think it's a good idea to rush through a nominee right now before the election?
I love thinking about that, but I look at the composition of the Senate, and you find me that fourth guy. I don't know.
So you're thinking more along the lines of that's not going to work to sway any behavior. That's just something we have to do. Like we are going to have a new shitty Supreme Court justice. We're just going to have to pack the court.
Yeah. I wish. You know that that's not where.
Yeah, you're an institutionalist.
I would love to say here's the grand bargain that can and again, part of me would say fuck that bargain too, right? Like it we're talking about preserving a 5-4 Supreme Court where the fulcrum is arch conservative but institutionalist John Roberts, right? Like the time to do a grand bargain was Anthony Kennedy, you know?
Right. Yeah, no, you're right. I think part of my brain is still in the mode of like, as you outlined earlier, it wasn't, there was a path to sort of gaining back the court eventually, but now it's like that's so far gone. Short of any court packing, anything, I mean, when would we possibly have a majority in the Supreme Court again? I mean, it's going to take forever.
Yeah.
So can you briefly refresh us on the court packing? I mean, what does that take? Is that just a simple majority? How does that work?
Yep. here's how that works. The number of Supreme Court justices is not fixed in the Constitution. The Article 3 just says that the judicial power of the United States shall be vested in one Supreme Court and such inferior courts as Congress may from time to time establish. That is damn near a direct quote. So, and so what we need is a Judiciary Act it's just a law. So super duper important, right? If we now, then this was always the case, it means that it is crucial to take back the Senate. That means going out and actively working in places that seem like a massive uphill battle, right? The polling numbers for Jamie Harrison in South Carolina are amazing. Get out, fucking work and vote for Jamie Harrison if you live in South Carolina. In Georgia, right? Those two seats are both up. They are both trending Republican. We can work in Georgia, in Montana, for God's sake, right? And I know, like, Senator Steve Bullock is going to, you know, quickly replace, Joe Manchin as the Democrat you're going to hate. I don't care. If we elect Joe Biden and lose the Senate, you can't do anything.
Yeah.
But if we elect Joe Biden and have the Senate, then what we need to do is for if he doesn't blow up the filibuster in its entirety, you blow up the filibuster for purposes of legislation, right? You clarify again, you do the same change the rules trick, and you clarify that for purposes of legislation to confirm changes to Article 3 appointments, that requires, you know, that's not subject to cloture and requires only a bare majority. And you pass a law that says, we're going to, you know, add 8 Supreme Court seats and double the size of the federal judiciary.
I wonder if Biden will do that.
I don't know. So, don't know. Let me give you my quick, institutional / provocative / troll the libs picks. And they would go like this. If Trump is – and really all this is if Mitch McConnell persuades Donald Trump to make his life easier, then you will get either Paul Clement, who we discussed earlier, or you will get Gregory Katsas, whom we have talked about, who has been he's the other reliable Trump appointee on the D.C. circuit. I don't know his age, but I assume he's young. Clement, as I said, is 56. Let's type in Gregory Katsas here real quickly. And obviously, you know, our listeners know you usually have researched all of this in advance, but
yeah. But Gregory Katsas, sorry, we were busy doing Lot Awful Movies and researching Keanu Reeves and all of that. Those were the days.
Gregory Katsas, born 1964. So
a little old.
He 56. That's, you know,
way too old.
Clement is 54. So I would say, right, Clement or Katsas are your institutional safe choices. If you want the most aggressive choice that that nevertheless I think sadly would almost certainly sail through, Trump went out of his way to add Minnesota Senator Josh Hawley to his list of potential Supreme Court nominees. Josh Hawley is 40 years old, and he was a staff attorney with the Beckett Fund for Religious Liberty.
So wait, is he going to lose or something? Why?
No, but I believe Missouri has a Republican governor.
Missouri?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you just said Minnesota. I was confused. Yeah. You gotcha.
Missouri. So right. Republican governor will be easily replaced. He's 40, and unless he's Ted Cruz, right, he's probably made friends with the Republicans in the Senate, right? And yeah. it's harder, right? Even for somebody like Mitt Romney, like if you're like, oh yeah, Josh, I like Josh. We, you know, we go get caffeine free tea together, right? Like, I mean, who the Hawley would be. So safest choice, Paul Clement. Most aggressive choice that nevertheless, I would say has a 100% chance of sailing through is Josh Hawley. And Hawley is the way to think about this is Hawley is the exact opposite of Andrew Seidel. I mean this with 100% sincerity. He is a staff attorney for the Beckett Fund, was a staff attorney for the Beckett Fund for Religious Liberty, which is the right wing equivalent of the FFRF, right? He's their Andrew Seidel. And so if you could imagine Joe Biden appointing Andrew Seidel and his glorious butt to the Supreme Court.
I was going to say, how's the butt on this other guy? Does he have a convex butt or something? What's the opposite? Yeah, concave?
Oh, man. If he had the worst butt in the Senate,
hopefully.
That would truly make him.
There's no realistic possibility of Ted Cruz, right? I mean, nobody likes Ted Cruz.
And Trump hates Ted Cruz, right? So, yeah. That was on there to troll the libs. Clement. Hawley, if you want to be hyper aggressive, but still win. And if Trump is spoiling for a fight, then you go back to Barrett, right? Amy Coney Barrett.
How old is she?
Let's find out.
Google. How old? Yeah. We can just activate everybody else's Alexas.
Oh my goddamn word.
What?
48.
Yep. I think that's the pick.
That will set up a fight that will lose Susan Collins. That might lose, it will lose Collins and Murkowski. It might lose Mitt Romney. And you maybe, I mean, again, it's hard to get in their mindset. That may be what Trump wants, right?
Yeah.
Trump may want us, divided on partisan lines.
What about so that we're Trump's not talking strategy? About,
yeah.
Has yeah. suggested that what he's really trying to do is get a few moderates over to him.
No.
I know. I'm not targeting this at you. I'm just saying that, like, I think you are doing the thing you said earlier. And maybe, you know, who knows? Maybe you're right, I'm wrong. But, like, I think you are doing the thing earlier where you put yourself in the mind of or in the spot of a Trump or whatever, and you're not able to do that because you're just such a delightful, nice fellow. This is
but
a person
he did
who
not,
is campaigning on his base. He thinks he will stop everybody else from voting except his base, or he will just say it was fraud anyway and it's cheating anyway, or all the while he's cheating. I do not think he's going to do anything other than try to do the worst, most conservative possible thing. That maybe you're right that, you know, somebody else in the room who will probably be in charge or something might make a different choice or want to not pick a fight with certain Republicans.
And that's right. Possible. And look, I'll say it both ways, right? Listeners to the show know, I successfully predicted both the Kavanaugh and Gorsuch opinions. And what I did was got in the head of Don McGahn.
Yeah. Well,
Don McGahn isn't there anymore. Yeah. So, the question is the methodology that I used to predict those picks still valid? If it is, then I think it's going to be Clement.
Okay.
If it isn't, and look, I am coming around to this point of view that, like,
that's important to emphasize. You were correct on the last two picks before they were announced. You know, one of them we stupidly released the episode late, so it was after it was announced, but we had recorded it before. And the other one you just guessed before. I think the Gorsuch anyway, who was Kavanaugh was, or no, Gorsuch was first? Gorsuch was first, right?
Yeah.
Anyway, the point is you have the track record, so, you know, hope, you know, you're likely right on this. But it does scare me to know that it's no longer Don McGahn, it's someone worse.
And let me say this explicitly, right? The argument for your perspective, the argument for Amy Coney Barrett is if you're Donald Trump and his team, you would much rather the next 40 days be about Republicans and Democrats fighting over a judicial nominee than Republicans and Democrats COVID. Fighting over the fact that he's completely mishandled the COVID-19 crisis.
And I think that's going to happen regardless, don't you think? I mean, there's just no helping that. What if this fucking, oh my God, what if this timing is such that even despite a pandemic killing 200,000 people in this country, it's going to just keep going up, that like this is such a horrible issue that this becomes the focus. Gosh, I didn't even think about that.
Yeah.
Wow.
I think.
All right.
Yeah.
Why don't we call it? Final words.
Yeah. It is rare. I'll end with where I began. I do not have hope and an optimism on this. I do not see a path forward. And I think that the only thing to do is to fight back, is to
pack
say
the fucking courts.
Yep. That there's nothing. And again, I'm on record in 2017 saying, you know,
yeah,
that's not,
you
the
have
strategy.
Made the full Breaking Bad transition.
Yeah.
You
I have broken
went
bad.
From Walter White to Heisenberg.
Yeah. I'm full Heisenberg. I'm a judicial Heisenberg right now.
Well, I just, sorry. You know, it's hard. Again, this is a live reaction. We will do a more fitting tribute to the great RBG.
Yeah.
May she rest in peace. Absolutely. But we're terrified, you know, and like, honestly, RBG is great. We do intend to do that. But like, what's more important to me right now, you know, than honoring somebody who is gone is how many millions of people's rights might be taken away. Like, I'm scared. And this episode was more geared toward that, and it turns out we should be scared. And now the only thing, you know, in a twisted way, the fact that we just have to go nuclear now is maybe more encouraging. You know, maybe the fact that things are so bad that even Andrew Torres is like, let's pack the courts. Maybe that means, okay, let's win and pack the courts, and maybe that has some chance of happening. So I don't know. I guess that's what I'm pinning my hopes on right now, what little hopes they are. But that doesn't mean, you know, there isn't still so much catastrophic risk on the way.
Yep, I agree.
Well, we appreciate you guys so much, especially at times like these. Like, we really love the community we have. And I just also, you know, I want to do a shout at anybody who is doing what we need to be doing, who is making calls, knocking doors. Well, not really doing that right now, but making calls and organizing all that stuff. We love you so much. You're doing a great job. Keep it up. The times are absolutely fucking terrible. And that's why it's even more important to have amazing people like many of our listeners who are doing that work.
And I love that you end with that. Let me end with my own sort of plea and pitch. Some of you are not on Facebook for good reasons.
Yeah.
If you are, and you haven't joined the OA Facebook community, give it a join. We get nothing out of that. This is not like pitching.
Yeah, it doesn't benefit us. Patreon, but it is a nice place.
It's work for us. But it's good people, and it is not a debate forum. And I want to add in sort of as the pitch to people in the community, know that we're all hurting right now, and take an extra minute to be kind to each other, we need that support. So if you're looking for support in these socially distant times, it's a great place 99% of the time. And we're trying to up that to 99.5% of the time. If you're already there, you know, be kind, be good, because we need it.
Well said. Thanks so much, Andrew.
We love you guys.
For doing this rapid reaction, and we will see you, you know, I assume on Thursday we'll see you for more OA in detail about RBG. Yeah. But in the meantime, enjoy Monday's episode, which has nothing to do with this and was recorded in the before time. So we'll see you then.